for example, we were talking about Vulcan Queen with pre-Jax.
What? What? Captain's Pod, Stardate 17-21-34.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief short leave from the world of cinema sins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she doesn't believe in AI Elgar's golems, it's Ambassador Danae.
Hold on a second, I'm trying to remember last week's episode. Stupid fucking AI golems.
I'm still thinking about how... Of all the things you've seen in Star Trek, Lord of the Rings, fantasy, that's the one that you're like, nah, it's bullshit. That ain't happening.
No, that's not happening.
It's not a big leap from, like, shapeshifters. Like, Odo could become an Elkar's golem if he really thought about it.
It was that the wall evolved into it. It wasn't like a panel opened up and a golem walked out. It was part of the... I don't believe that part.
I can see that being a bigger leap, yeah. But like Discovery.
Oh, now you agree.
No. I can see where your leap is. But Discovery had like liquid metal shit that like reformed and wiggled around.
I'm trying to think of if the show would have said elk whatever panel golem made of wiggly around juice.
Mm.
And just adding a little more context would have helped. Right.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mention it because it's a very interesting pin in your barometer of what you're allowed to accept, and I'm gonna make a scale that now, and I have one end of the scale. I didn't have that end. I had so much that you That's would believe true. In. I didn't really have one that you just reject out of hand. So this is I love data. This is amazing.
This is a big day.
How are you feeling this week, Ambassador? We have two episodes of Lower Decks left.
I'm mixed. I'm glad that we're going to be doing something else, and I also am aware that this is the end of the show, and that's a bit sad. So like, I'm ready to be done with it,
yeah.
But I'm also sad to be done with it.
I'm really, really excited to get back into some live action Star Trek. And quick spoiler for what's coming up. We're going to be doing episodes that I'm semi-confident Danae is going to love. So we're going to be hitting like some TNG classics for the next season of Captain's Pod. And I'm really, really excited to get back into some TNG. But I am going to miss Lower Decks. It's bittersweet because it's not like... We're really going to have a chance to come back to Lower Decks because this is it. Like, this is the end. It's very interesting to be here for the end of Lower Decks. But that end isn't quite here yet. We have got this week is Fissure Quest. I am really excited for this episode because I think we're going to dive really deep into the fissures, the alternate universes. I think this is the perfect example to get us to meet some people that we... wouldn't be able to meet under normal circumstances. And I would be so disappointed if we don't take advantage of that. Because we already have with, like, alternate Boimler and an alternate Data and an alternate, like, Cerritos crew. Like, lots of alternate people have popped up. So yes. I'm very excited to see if they push this all the way to the limit. How do you feel about it just based off the title?
I hope that they do what you want because I feel like the super fans of Star Trek... need to have that delighted sensation that happens when a show delivers something that only like a cartoon type show like this can do.
Yeah. Well, let's head into what I'm presuming is going to be a two-parter to finish off Lower Decks Season 5 and the show altogether. Let's head over to the holodeck to watch the episode. We'll see you in 10 Forward for a full debrief. Two to beam out.
I want to walk.
No. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched. Most important question first, what is your thing of choice from the replicator?
I can't believe I forgot that.
Wow.
I have to think now.
Wow, Danae.
I know.
Wow.
They did go to 10 Forward at one point in time and have like a little camera pan around the room and there was somebody that was maybe eating like ramen or something.
Curzon was eating a bowl of ramen noodles that looked really good. Yeah, I mean, it looked like it, and there was a lot of sodium in it, apparently, according to T'Pol.
It was very slurpy.
Yeah.
I'm going to hope it's not worms. I'm going to go with that.
Oh, wait. No, because if it was Gach, which occurs on Woody, it would have been like wriggling, and they're a darker color as well. And I don't think they're usually in liquid. They're usually just, you raw them.
I'm going to order it, and then I'm going to watch you take the first bite, and then I'll take
a bite.
That's
fair. Okay, so I guess I won't. Or I'm going to order a Batliff in case the Gach is still alive, and then I can kill it and then eat it. Give us a synopsis, Ambassador.
Holy shit, how do you synopsize this episode?
By just saying it's awesome and moving on.
Okay, in today's episode, awesome things happen at a very fast pace. If you've been hoping for an adventure, a space adventure of some kind, if you've been looking for an answer as to what is happening when we fish shore on this show, then this is the episode for you. And also, if you've ever wondered what Mariner is like when she's just a simple... ensign engineer person, then this is also the episode for you. Did it do everything that you wanted it to do? Because you were very excited to potentially have a lot of shit go down, a lot of like guest appearances and references. Like you were ready for a big episode. And I think this was 100% that episode. So are you, you said it was awesome. So you loved it.
Goodness. It fulfilled everything in a very thoughtful, deliberate way. The thought and care that went into this in a very clearly post-MCU doing multiverse shit, fatigue, tediousness time that we live in was chef's kiss genius. Like, it was so aware, clearly, that multiverses are getting a bit tiring, and it weaved that into the story perfectly. I love this episode so much. I love the cameos. I love the respect for the specificity of the characters and the cameos. And this episode did so much. It fixed so many things that people have wanted. And it just like, it went through this like checklist of what are the fans like on the internet? Like, what have they been, what's the weirdly specific things they're craving? And we're going to try and fix it in one episode. Loved it. Loved it, loved it. Loved this episode. Chef's kiss. I want Star Trek Fisher Quest to be the new series that we have.
Which, of course, it is not. Because they've already undone that possibility by the end of the episode. That's not happening. But it is an interesting concept because in this in today's episode, you have Boimler's accidental clone, which we thought was dead. Now, I didn't see this episode, so does this work for you?
This is in season two. Yeah, so we knew he wasn't dead. We knew that Section 31 picked him up, but we know that everyone on the Lower Decks crew believes he died. Yes.
Okay, so does that work for you that we see him in the captain's chair?
Oh, this is perfect. I think the promotion is a little bit quick, but also things are relative. We don't know how long he's been doing this because they kind of exist outside of time. So he could have been doing this for a long time for all we know. But yeah, this completely works. I really, really like it.
Yeah, you're right. I think for the animation style, we're meant to interpret his dark circles under his eyes as time spent besides just the frustration. And then also he has acquired many Kims. And so he's obviously been at it for a while.
So funny.
So can you explain to those of us who don't understand the Kims, you know, why this is so funny? Now I get some of the humor of it, and there's a lot to talk about in this episode, obviously, if I'm understanding correctly, if I'm picking up what the show is putting down, it's that Kim was often sent off in the shuttle. So that's why he's often collected. Is that right?
Not really, no. The bigger thing is how neglected Kim is in general and overlooked. So the big running gag is that Harry Kim, over 7 years of Voyager, is never promoted beyond ensign. Tom Paris, by comparison, was a criminal, was
white man
taken, correct, was taken out of jail by Janeway, given ensign status, was then promoted to lieutenant, demoted while on Voyager, and then promoted again back to lieutenant. And when he's like promoted the second time, Harry literally says, I wonder if there's going to be one of those pips hiding for me in the console. And it's just like dead silence, nobody says anything. So the gag is, it's insane that Harry, after everything he went through and how much he grew, he never got promoted. And then in the years since Voyager, it's just been this ongoing, will we ever see Harry Kim get promoted? So the two-pip Kim, when he, it's kind of like, hey, yeah, he got promoted. Look what happened. Look what happened when he got that second pip.
I loved it, but to me, I don't know. I'm now even more confused about how they acquired so many Kims, but Wandering in the chat said that there's five different episodes or like reality alternatives with Harry in them. So maybe that's what the show is getting at. Is it, my interpretation was that in all of these realities, Kim is the one that they sort of put on the shuttle as the expendable person to go send on a mission just in case shit goes wrong. Like, send Kim through the fissure, you know, that it's kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
And instead, maybe it's that there was multiple like episodes. And so they're referencing that more than they're.
Yeah, it's more like the weird shit happens to Kim. Like, he accidentally, like, gets turned into an alien after, like, having a relationship with somebody. There's, like, he ends up, like, going back in time into, like, an alternate past. He jumps over from an alternate Voyager. It's like, the Kim that we see in Voyager is not the Kim that we saw in episode one, because the episode one Voyager technically blows up, and then we're following a different Voyager, which is just fucking weird. It's an episode called Deadlock. So much fun. I think it is a reference to that as well. Like, there's already multiple Kims, but I think it's like just all of this weird shit happens to Kim. So of course they're going to bump into a lot of them and just end up collecting them on this parallel ship.
That's the one thing so far. We've only talked about one thing, I'm aware, but that's one thing so far that, like, unless you knew that, that maybe wasn't as clear as to how they had collected so many Kims. But it doesn't matter too much the how of it, because I thought that it was fun to see, because Kim ends up being the villain of the episode. Boimler is bummed to not have had an adversary this entire time. And here it comes in the form of saving another Kim, who is the two-pip Kim, who is the elevated one, and he's sort of worshipped by the other ones. And then, of course, he also is disgusted with himself for not having advanced in all of these ways, which is the play on the show, like you're mentioning. But that ends up being, like, what goes wrong in this episode. Did that work for you?
Yeah, that's the real gag for me, is that I think the reason we have multiple Kims there is to show that no matter what universe you're in, Kim doesn't get promoted. Like, he always gets fucked by the multiverse and for whatever reason doesn't get promoted. And there's only one, or it's a very, very rare thing when he gets promoted. And it's hilarious to me that the one time he does get promoted, it's because he's a bit, like, maniacal. Like, the thing that makes Kim Kim is the kind of thing that held him back as well. And it's not there in this, like, extra ambition. The reason he did get promoted was because maybe he was a bit more cutthroat. So it's really interesting. Once again, Lower Decks giving reason to something that is a Star Trek, like, trope. And, like, not something that's specifically mentioned on screen, but has been elevated by the fan base and made this, like, this just piece of Star Trek history that Kim never gets promoted.
It also plays on this, you know, him kind of, Kim, the one Kim, turning dark and evil and leaving everybody on this planet and fucking off in the big portal ship, the rift ship. There's a moment when he's like, why did we get put into this cell by ourselves and not over with the leadership?
I know.
And that sort of suspicious behavior, this grudge, I wonder if he didn't have it before because he was on a path to, you know, moving up the ranks and, you know, but then whenever he saw the failures of himself, it was even more evident that he has to really push to advance.
Well, this ambition, he then transfers all of this ambition to the other Kims. It's not enough for, like, him to succeed. He wants all of the Kims to succeed. Like, that's a really, as much as his, like, plan is some bullshit, I love the motivation behind it, because this really ambitious Kim would want that for his other Kims, because they're a bad reflection on him, and that's his, like, his ego and his arrogance. And the Kim that we know and love doesn't have much of an ego, and you could argue that maybe that's why he didn't progress as much, he didn't push himself forward as much. It could have just been a throwaway joke, oh look, he never got promoted, but to weave that into the plot and to use it to just explain it downfall? A little bit more. Yeah, it's one of my favorite things. It's like, okay, what if there is a logical reason for why Kim isn't promoted? And then what happens if he does get promoted? Like, I love that. That tickled me. It's so clever to give that extra life.
There's so much to talk about. So much happens in this episode.
So much. What worked really well for you? Like, what did you, references like aside, what did you really enjoy about the adventure? Because I'll spend 7 hours talking about the references.
Yes. And I think that's going to be something that most people who listen to this podcast are excited about. So I think that you should definitely take center stage on in that regard. I loved the design of the ship, the Fizzer ship.
Oh, the Beagle. I got to talk about
this. Beagle.
The Beagle.
Have we seen anything like it before? Yes. I don't know that I have. You have? Oh, of course. It's a reference as well.
It's a reference. It's so good. Let's move away from references for a minute. No, we got to talk about it. This is amazing. This ship first appears in Star Trek The Motion Picture. It's on a poster on the wall, and there's like a series of Enterprises through time. And this is the first time we ever saw it. And we were like, huh. Well, I say we. I wasn't alive when the movie came out. But it's like, huh, I wonder what that ship was, because we know about the shuttle Enterprise, because that's a real thing that happened. We know about Kirk's Enterprise, and they stuck in a couple of other Enterprises, and I think it appears in Enterprise the TV show as well. And it's just one of these early warp capable ships, I believe it was warp capable, called Enterprise. So it's just fun that this parallel universe where they start trekking through alternate realities instead of space, that they use this concept. So it's fun to see it on screen flying around. It's just the perfect opportunity to show us this ship in action. I remember when we talked
and the conversation with the writer who created the character. Was it Archer? No.
Oh, no, we did. Fred Bronson created...
It's not Archer, is it?
No, it's not. It's the captain before Kirk on the Enterprise, mm-hmm, which was mm-hmm. Captain... not Pike, it's pre-Pike. April.
Pre-Pike.
Robert April. Captain April.
Yes, April.
He invented that character for the animated show.
There was this moment where, I don't know that I... You create a character, you create something, and it doesn't get past a certain point. You're still thankful to create the character. And then years later, someone actually brings it to life.
Exactly.
And you asked him about that. And it was really fun to see him kind of light up.
He was honored.
And we ourselves, as creators of stories with like different character work that you and I, Ian, have done in various capacities, I cannot imagine... what that would feel like.
Mm-hmm.
There's a question that came up in the CinemaSins Bony Pod question, and it was something like, if you could bring any character to dinner, what would it be? And I actually had this moment when I thought, would I actually want one of my own characters to come to life and like meet them? Because they exist in my mind and they're controlled by me when I do like any kind of tabletop role play or whatever. But how fun would it be to see it come to life? And I just sat there and thought about how crazy it would be to have Sadie Jean or Babs or any of the characters that I've done character work on, like just come to life. And then I transitioned into thinking about, that is what it is like to watch something make it to film, to make it onto the screen. And those are really big moments. But if this was just a potential concept art, and a different ship is picked and you're kind of like, man, I got so close. Uh-huh. But then here, all this time later, it's brought to life and animated in such a fun way, because this fucking Beagle, which I love that it's called a Beagle.
And that's named after Archer's, the type of dog that Archer has.
Archer?
Captain Archer. Yeah. He has a dog. He has
not
a Beagle.
April.
No.
So there is an Archer?
There is a Captain Archer. April? Yeah. Captain Archer and Captain April.
Gosh,
yeah.
About 100 years apart.
So many words, but
it like all it comes together and sort of moves and shifts, and when it goes to warp and does these things,
great. The ring that moves, like, that wasn't in the design as far as I know. The ring that like moves as it lands, and then like they literally brought it to life.
And I can't relate to that. I can't relate to that excitement. I've never experienced that before, but we've talked to Fred about it. Mm-hmm. He was really like so happy. I just can't imagine what this person feels like if they're still alive. I hope that they are and they got to see it.
Yeah, I'm not too sure actually who designed it, but yeah, it made it to screen. I remember it was an interview somewhere, but Gene Roddenberry said the ship needs to be, you need, if this ship is going to be popular and become going to become famous, kids need to be able to draw it really simply. So circle, body, two tubes. And that's, it's so simple. And that's why I was able to make the Enterprise out of Lego when I was 10, because it's such a simple design. Like, making it simple like that is one of the reasons it's iconic. So
and now you're having Iris do that. She's starting to build Enterprises.
She's drawing Enterprises. I'm a happy, happy little nerd to pass it on.
So anyways, you asked, like, you sort of asked, I didn't realize the history to it. Now I love it even more.
Mm-hmm.
I also loved how this Boimler, at first I wasn't really relating to him because he is a version I don't know. Even though there's a familiarity to him, I wasn't really sure how I was going to be connecting to him. But when Mariner shows up, the way that they animate the emotion and the relief in his eyes of seeing someone that it's such a simple animation too. Like it's, they just have done such a great job. There's even a moment when Mariner realizes that she's standing next to some character and she's making, like, she's like, is that who I think it is? You know, this person, and her little lips are so small. Yeah. They do such a great job of showing the emotion, but I love that. And I loved Mariner in this episode, this sort of different version of herself. But unsurprisingly, I'm sure to any of you listening, that's about it for me. Because everything else is just like this sure seems like it's a cool thing. I mean, I love the space battles and I love the visuals and the fissure. I love this like crazy axolotl salamander murderers. Those are fun.
Yeah, I think they're Moopsies. Are they like, they're different versions of Moopsie?
Well, there's a reference to thank God they don't like suck our bones. Yeah. So they had a very similar vibe, but they're very, So I liked that. I thought that the storytelling and the pacing was fun and I was definitely in for an adventure and I barely noticed time going by. In fact, I never looked at the clock. It went by so, so fast. So it was a really exciting episode.
Well, and this is the longest episode of the season. This is 28 minutes long. So it's about It went so quick. So do you think the story got like a bit lost for you because it was filled with characters from other franchises that you're like, okay, this seems fun to people who know who these characters are? Or did the story, like, did you still appreciate the story as an episode?
I did not appreciate it like you will. Yeah, this is maybe the first. It felt very much like I'm going to a family reunion of a family that loves them. Like, they love each other so much. I'm walked into this room and just spun in circles and I'm meeting all of these faces and all of these people and all these names and they all look a little bit familiar, but they're talking so fast. And then someone asked me to drink a drink. And then all of a sudden we're looking at rainbows. It was a lot.
Yeah.
I would not go back and watch this episode.
Yeah. Because this doesn't have the grounding of our Lower Decks crew. This has even like Boimler and Mariner are the familiar faces. It's a very different Mariner. It's a very different Boimler. So I was interested to kind of like see how it worked for you. And I think that would be my worry as well. Like, this is a love letter to Star Trek fans. So I was curious to know if like the core adventure works without that special knowledge of like the stuff that it's tapping into.
It's the kind of party, it's the kind of reunion that I am filled up by. There's a frantic energy to it and there is an excitement to it and there's a fun to it and there's familiar voices and there's familiar, like I said, a lot of the characters, like I recognize them, but I don't have any emotional connection. There's a lot of techno babble. I don't really have any connection to that either. There's a lot of drama between characters and fun stretching of the imagination that I think would be really, really fun to experience if I was a super fan.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave this party glad I went, but I'm not leaving it. Like, I'm in this for you. So I want to take a big old backseat and hear you talk about this episode because I don't really have much to add, honestly.
Yeah, it is. It's a massive fan fiction episode, which is interesting to explore if you're more like kind of casual to Star Trek. I think one of the big things that you will have been lost on is the Bashir and Garrick thing. So the two doctors. That so we've got the holographic doctor that's based on Bashir from Deep Space Nine and Garak, who I don't think you've seen Garak the Cardassian yet in Deep Space Nine.
I recognize the character, but yeah. I don't have any reference for his nature.
Yeah, so Garak is a leftover Cardassian on Deep Space Nine. So he's the only one that stays on Deep Space Nine. And there's this subplot of, okay, he says he's a tailor and he runs the clothes shop, but is he a spy left behind by the Cardassians? Like, what's his deal? Why is he happy to stay behind with a ship, a space station full of Federation and Bajorans? And as like the series goes on, you realize he's actually a spy, but not for the Cardassians. He worked for a shady organization, but he clearly has this history of spycraft and knowing way more than just a tailor should know. And Bashir is the one that's really suspicious of him. And then gradually, as the years go on, they become best friends and they bond. And by the end of the series, pretty much like the entire internet, especially when like Star Trek became an internet thing to talk about, was just like, man, I bet they be fucking, I bet Bashir and Garak were like made for each other. And in the end they got together, and because they had, they argued like a stereotypical old married couple. They would get into these like big heated debates, but Garak had like such a care, and he would say, oh, my dear doctor. And like, it's the...
Like he seemed very, yes, like an intellectually driven.
Yes. And Bashir would challenge him intellectually because he's an augment. So he has like a huge, big old complicated brain. And Garak loved debating this and like not quite giving away all of the secrets. As, oh, dear doctor, if I told you that, then I'd have to kill you. And you're not too sure if he actually would kill him.
But right. Oh, well, that's really fun.
It's so fun.
This is in Deep Space Nine?
This is in Deep Space Nine.
And that's the space where they experimented with like seasonal arcs and like really long storytelling.
Darker themes. Yeah.
People who are enjoying characters, it's like a deep, like almost like a deep love. I love my characters too. But when you're watching and investing in like you're talking about like friendships developing over time, they don't have to cram it all into one episode. They're doing like seasonal shifts. So just it must be pretty emotional.
Sprinkle it in. And it's, it was always great. Whenever Garak turned up and asked questions, immediately that tweaked the audience to know this is important. Garak wouldn't be involving himself if this wasn't important. And when he reaches out to like a contact, everything is exposing himself. So when he gets involved, you know big shit is going down. So it was a really clever, subtle way of doing that. But for some reason, he picked Bashir as his plaything. And they just have this, like, the same way I can kind of see Q and Picard being in a relationship in that kind of like combative way. But Garak and Bashir were very much romanced to heck. So it's so, so freaking fun to see them actually on screen as a couple living it. And it's fine. Like, they get the excuse of, oh, it's an alternate universe, so we can do whatever the hell we want. But it is a literal love letter to the fans. Well, not literal. It's a love letter to the fans to say, here you go, we get them on screen. This is Garak and Bashir as a couple on screen kissing.
And did that work for you?
Oh, of course it worked for me. Absolutely.
Awesome. Like, I love to see the representation. Honestly, I really did enjoy that part.
And Cardassians can love too.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I loved it so much. It's not like just a little throwaway thing that five people in the fandom think about. It has become like generally accepted by fans. Oh yeah, yeah, they were together. Yeah. But yeah, they definitely went on to fall in love. I love that they worked into the show. And it's one of the many things that ties the show together of the what ifs. Like, these are the things that fans have been asking for, because Boimler at the beginning says like, it's just derivative and it's the multiverse is just the same old thing that you've seen again. It's just like, it's a way to see a big Spock or a human Worf or a silly thing, where actually the function of the episode is to show us the things the fans have wanted or think they want, but you have no hope of seeing on screen. So it's kind of a fuck you to like people who hate the multiverse, understandably, but like, yeah, but you can use it to do this. And that's personally why I love multiverse. The potential of multiverse stuff, because it's a playground to say, what if this would be fun to see these two characters get together?
But it was still fun to see Boimler just like annoyed, like, oh, we're going to see like an evil version of Picard, you know, just this sort of sassy ass.
Yeah, it's all stuff we've seen, but just slightly different. And it's amazing. He's done with it.
And you've got to have that in there, because to do multiverse stuff now, you have to be self-aware about it. Like Deadpool and Wolverine. Deadpool's very aware. He just comes out and says, everything after Endgame has been a bit shit, guys. Like, what are we doing? So that really, really worked for me. Just going to keep going on the references. One of the other, it's a more subtle one, but the inclusion of T'Pol is really, really, really cool. So T'Pol is the Vulcan that's on the bridge.
That's the one that Mariner freaks out when she sees.
Mariner really geeked out when she saw her. T'Pol was our Enterprise, which is one of the shows we haven't seen that I've mentioned. It's a prequel to TOS. So this is like 100 years before Captain Kirk. It's the first time the humans are venturing really far into deep space. Like, the Klingons are introduced in episode 1, and they've never met Klingons before. They don't even know what a Klingon is. So it is right at the beginning of the humans' exploration into space. And they're kind of being guided by the Vulcans. So they have a Vulcan on the bridge. T'Pol was like a fan favorite. T'Pol was a great character. However, this is during like a bit of a problematic era for Star Trek. So you know how like 7 of 9, Jerry Ryan would be dressed up in these like cat suits and very revealing uniforms. T'Pol kind of had the same thing, and it made less sense because she was Vulcan. So it was even more on the nose that, are we just dressing up some eye candy here? Like, are we being that kind of disingenuous and just like kind of taking advantage? And there's some rumors about like how she was actually treated on set. She basically, Jolene Blalock left Star Trek kind of saying, I don't want to come back. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. And didn't leave by all reports on good terms, basically. So for her to come back and to be given like a really cool role and to like be willing to come back as well is so freaking cool. Like, it was so, it just warmed my heart to see her on screen again and just to see her inhabit the character and really enjoy it. It was just, it's a cool little character to bring back.
So having no like emotional connection to the character at all was fine. I was like, oh, I love Vulcans. I'm liking her character. I'm liking how they communicate. Obviously she's interacting with this other character who has Dax somebody in her or something.
Yes.
How did that work for you at the end when she does the mind melding with this symbiote thingy?
Yeah, no, it makes complete sense for me because...
Is that something we've seen before?
We haven't seen a Vulcan do that to somebody that wasn't a Vulcan. So when Spock dies, he knows he's going to die, so he transfers his Cutra to McCoy. And the idea isn't to like be reborn, but their consciousness is transferred to the Vulcan home planet where it kind of exists. So their knowledge isn't lost. Their experiences and everything still continue on. So that's something that's explored in Enterprise. And T'Pol is one of the people that's like, nope, doesn't exist. And then through one of her missions, she's like, oh, it does exist. That is a thing. So it's fun for her to like adapt that to the Trill, who continue on with their memories. And obviously they can transfer their experiences to the symbiont that then moves on to the next body. So it's kind of like two different types of computer code talking to each other. So I'm like, I'm not too sure how that works, but I'm fine with it working. I'm interested to see what they do with that in the next episode, if anything.
And who is the person that she's interacting with? They have this sort of back and forth, the one with the Bat'leth.
Yes, that's Curzon Dax. That's one of Jadzia's ancestors. So one of, not ancestors, it's one of the previous hosts.
Predecessor or whatever.
Yeah, predecessor.
Her previous host.
So I think Jadzia is number 7 or 6, something like that. So she's had like 6 or 7 hosts before her. And Curzon was the one immediately before her. So Curzon was Sisko's mentor. So he's had this huge life. He had a big like kind of adventures with the Klingons. I think he was an ambassador to the Klingons at one point. And he's just, again, he's a fan favorite symbiont. Like, people have been asking to see Curzon in Strange New Worlds because, wow, Curzon would be alive during this time. Are we going to see Curzon Dax? So it's again,
been seen before now? Is this the first time?
We've seen him in an episode of Deep Space Nine where Jadzia talks to her previous hosts. And he looks like that. They've animated that version of him for this show, which is really, it's a great nod. But that's the only time we've seen him. We haven't seen him pop up. I think he's appeared in books. We haven't seen him like actually on screen.
So Phil in chat reminded me that Jadzia always, or that the boss man on Deep Space Nine calls Jadzia old man. So mm-hmm. this is the old man.
And that's why. Yeah, Curzon's the old man. Interesting.
Okay.
So it's a good symbiont to pick because we already have like a lot of knowledge about him. We know he's Klingon obsessed. He had like this bond with the Klingons. So yeah, if you're going to pick one to put on screen, again, it's a, here you go, fans. We're going to give you something you've been asking for.
Yeah, I did enjoy that character because there was like a moment he's like, all right, everybody calm down. You're all going to get your asses kicked. Like, yeah. I just really enjoyed that sort of nature.
Super cavalier. He's very old school Star Trek. He grew up in, well, he was prevalent in Kirk's era. So there's a bit more of like a cowboy space ranger element to him, which I'm glad they carried forward.
Yeah, that was fun because we kind of needed to have, I wondered why he had a batliff though. So that, I guess that makes, like, now we're talking about it and I knew we mm-hmm. would talk about it and it would make more sense. Now it kind of makes more sense.
Yeah.
But we did need to have a couple of like battle crazy people and it was really fun. Strange not to see Mariner in that position.
Well, how did you like that bit of the episode? So this is a calmer, more contemplative, reserved Mariner, much more like maybe Geordi, a little bit more risk averse. Like just a very calm soul. Did you like that or did you find yourself missing Cavalier Mariner?
It's interesting because if you're sitting down at a table to put together an episode like this and you know you're going to need to have these characters that do clutch things with their clutch knowledge at like yeah. the most pivotal moments. You know, you have to have the engineer and you have to have the person that remembers. Like, there's so many fucking things that have to happen perfectly in this episode for no one to die.
Yes, and welcome to Star Trek.
Insane. Like, this one's insane. Yes. There's rifts being opened, but they need to be put together better so that they can do this. There's stuff that they gotta shoot into a rift so they can do this. There's gravity shit that's gotta happen. Like, it is incredible. The amount of techno babble.
Oh, that was a
in
lot.
This episode. And usually we talk about how, oh, it makes sense that there is a what does Data prefer to be called?
An android?
I was going to say android, but then I got worried that I was, because no, I was trying to say robot.
Yeah, don't say robot.
True. Okay, yeah. I call Rutherford a robot.
Robotford, yeah.
I'm sorry.
He's an augmented biological life.
He's Robo Boy.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, this entire episode's his fault.
Wait.
I'm just kidding. Nope. I was just saying that to make everybody stop and go, really?
Wait. It worked.
I need to remember to use my power to go yeah. for good. But what I understand about needing, I don't know. I liked it. I liked seeing Mariner in this position. Mm-hmm. But it seems like they needed to have certain characters fulfill those roles of having the knowledge that's needed to do the things that make this episode work. And it's all just super, super convenient and it's incredibly sinful. And it doesn't, this is why I would believe in like God or Q. Like it would take some sort of outside force to put all of these people together to make the decisions that they're making to save the end of all. To save every reality from dying. And this episode packs it in there. Like you only yeah. have 12 seconds and a simplified version of a bubble bath to realize that we're all going to die in every
yeah, every
reality.
Universe. Yeah.
So it was very like, I don't think, was it Endgame or multiverse? It was very much that mm-hmm. where if we don't do this thing, then this everybody dies and you can't really stop to think about it. And you can't really stop to think about what character is giving you the information that is needed crucially in that moment. I'm going to go ahead and give the only sin that I could cut, like that really bothered me. There's even a moment when Mariner pops up on screen or in the middle of a conversation, like, hey, like, when does that ever happen? When do we ever see this happen where someone interrupts the middle of a conversation on the bridge as if they're eavesdropping from another place with just like a little pop up, like a little, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I can't remember that happening, but anyway, and it's Mariner and she is this crucial, pivotal, I've got information because in my universe, I was actually researching this. That could have been any character. It could have been Data. It could have been anybody because it could have been anything. And I think they needed to have Mariner on board to remind Boimler about his friends. And yeah. that was really maybe the heart of the episode in that way was mm-hmm. him believing so much in his capable friends of his reality that they could destroy their reality or trust that they're going to save the day.
Yeah.
And so we have to have Mariner on board. And if she were taking any attention that she usually does, I don't think this episode works. So they had to put her in the back seat as the quiet person.
Yeah, otherwise, she would have been like riffing on T'Pol, on Curzon. It would have been like unbelievable. It would have been way, 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 way too much. So I didn't even think about this, but I think it's really smart to have this on an alternate crew where the novelty for Boimler, even though he's like a transporter double, the novelty has worn off for him. And these are just people that he's working with from different universes. It isn't like we're not dealing with anybody that's really starstruck, which is, it's really clever because that would have taken up a lot of time in the episode.
And Boimler
would have
no
been
sense.
Paralyzed. Mariner would have been over the top. Yeah, yeah. It's really, really, that's a good point. I think it makes
sense. Mariner would have been the one person at the reunion that would have been too much, that would have spoiled the event.
Yes.
So I think they had to give her a creative reason to be a muted character. So did it work for me? Yes, because when you're sitting at the table and you're trying to fill all of these roles to make this episode work, and you've got Mariner card and you're like, where are we going to put Mariner in this? Because if we don't put this in the right spot and give her a crucial role while also not, like, they had to figure out how to make it work. And they did a great job of that. So yes, it worked for me. But she's one of the only characters that I know. So it wasn't as fun to see her doing the thing.
It's kind of like if she was real, like, and in TNG, I could, like, she seemed a lot more grounded. And the same with, like, Boimler. They were both much more grounded individuals. This felt much less to the extreme of like what happens in cartoons. This felt very grounded in Star Trek.
It's this episode today, this podcast today is very much that moment when your friend is having an amazing meal and you're just like, yeah, it's okay, but you're not about to talk about it too much because they're having such a, so you just keep going. You just keep talking about it. Like, did it work for me? Yes. Does it taste as great as it tastes for you? Probably not, but that's not the point, right? Like,
exactly.
Keep going. Like, let's talk more about, because there's still so much, I think, to like really examine. For example, we were talking about Vulcan Queen with pre-Jax.
What? What?
There's a Vulcan lady.
T'Pol.
T'Pol.
Yeah, with Curzon.
And then there's the pre-Jax guy.
Yes,
old
pre-Dax.
Man.
Yeah.
Dax, not Jax.
Pre-Jax sounds like you have...
I know. Yeah. I heard it. Let's just move on.
Okay.
But they seem to have like a connection. Did they come from the same reality? Or
I don't think so.
Okay. Because they couldn't have because it was different times. So they didn't know each other before this episode. But they had been on the ship together
for correct.
A long time.
Yes. Okay, so the characters, as we know them, hadn't interacted in canon. But yeah, I think they've been on the crew together for a while. Yeah, so they have a history together. Yeah.
So I think that's another part that I'm glad to talk about with you and to talk about your excitement, because I, not knowing the characters like you do, I also was regularly wondering if they had shared realities before the ship or not.
No, not to my knowledge, unless it's like in a book that I've missed. This is the only bit of the episode, not the only bit, but it's one of the bits of the episode where I can imagine they put a ton of characters on the wall and threw two darts and were like, oh, T'Pol and Curzon, that's fun, and then put it together. Like, there's no real meaning to it for me other than T'Pol understanding the soul and the emotions and the memories live on.
Right.
And the Trill understand that more than kind of anyone else.
And she's going to make sure that she gets that information back to his reality to continue on.
Yes.
Which means that if that is the same reality that we're in, that's how it was actually transferred to...
Not necessarily to Jadzia.
Okay.
No, because that happens... I think he dies of old age, bizarrely. I think that the transition to Jadzia was very deliberate. Like, that wasn't like an emergency thing. That was, okay, Curzon's at the end of his life. Move on to Jadzia. Here's the next host.
So Sci-Fi Brony says that they don't think anyone shares realities on this ship. So that means that the two doctors... It's just their personalities reattracted each other to each other in this ship.
Yes, exactly.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I think I'm tracking now.
That's
Thank
one
you
of the
that.
Interesting
okay.
things is that they still ended up towards each other. Like, Mariner's personality is different, but holographic Bashir is the same. Garak is the same. T'Pol is the same. Curzon is the same. Like, but they're not from the universes that we know. I mean, Curzon. No. Curzon can't be because Boimler specifically says at the beginning, it's Curzon at a point where he hasn't
lost his symbiont. So it's very wibbly wobbly. They don't explain it too much, but yeah.
Well, it's definitely one that if you love this and you watch it again, you'll probably learn even more because they just pack it all in there.
Well, I want this TV show. Like, what's in a previous episode of the pod that I've just remembered, we mentioned, and I can't remember if it's in the outtakes or during one of the episodes, I think I mentioned that we need, like, we have a temporal, there's a temporal branch of Starfleet that looks after the temporal time directive, and they'll pop up if time travel shenanigans have happened. I said, why don't we have a department that deals with parallel universes and all of the shit that happens? And they made it. It's Fisher Quest. They do have it.
Are you listening to our show?
They must be listening. How was that not one of my predictions? I already accidentally predicted it.
So we have the Kims, which we've kind of covered. We've got the bridge crew. I think we've gone over all of the bridge crew, but then they interact with this other group of people, and what do we know about them? Because obviously I know nothing, so have at these folks.
We know very little about them other than their captain, Lily, and it is uncanny how I was doing, and this has got to be deliberate. Engineer Mariner was like, ha, you seem familiar, what's going on? At the same time that I was like, yeah, no, she does seem familiar. Who is it? And it's Lily, and she's in the second TNG movie, First Contact. This is, I think I've explained this plot at some point. The Borg attempt to go back in time to assimilate Earth in the past so that they don't create Starfleet and they don't become a burden in the future. The Enterprise follows them back in time, figures out what they're trying to do. And what the Borg are trying to do, instead of going back to caveman times and killing them, they decide to go to the specific day that we first test warp travel. And on that day, Zefram Cochrane, who invented warp drive, leaves the planet. The Vulcans are in the sector and like, ha, the humans have warp drive. We'd better go say hello. And the Borg want to prevent that from happening because that's the start of Earth joining the rest of the galaxy. And Lily is Zefram's kind of like right-hand woman that helps him create the first warp ship and is just at his side doing everything. Lily ends up on the Enterprise with Picard and helps them save the day, essentially. We never see her since. We never see her again. So, and it's the same actor as well. It's Alfre Woodard, who's an absolute legend. And she's come back to voice the character, and this version of Lily has continued on, but instead is doing parallel universe stuff instead of exploring space. So just a stroke of genius to bring her in. This cast must have been cripplingly expensive for this episode because all of these are the original voice actors.
This is why they had to stop making the show. And they just spent too much money on the voice actors and all the budget just ran out.
I was like, you spent how much on episode 9 of season 5? Cancelled. Done.
Wandering says, when Picard says the line must be drawn here and no further, he's saying it to her. Oh.
Lily is one of the few characters to give Captain Picard a 100% dressing down because the entire crew is like, blow up the ship. We need to evacuate the Enterprise. We need to blow it up. And Captain Picard is like, I'm not giving up. I'm not. The Borg in like the whole speech is like the Borg invaded us. They take our worlds and we keep retreating. And it's not fair. I'm not going to stop. They're not taking my ship. And Lily follows him into his ready room and he's just like, oh, you want to be like Captain Ahab? You want to go down with your ship? You're going to get everyone here killed. And just screams at him, blow up the damn ship, Jean-Luc. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do it. But eventually he does because Lily convinces him. She's such a great character. And the actor, Alfre Woodard, just is so, so good in that movie. So, so good. So, yeah, loved her in this episode, which does lead us nicely into my favorite, like, the moral theme of the episode here that I did not expect and love to bits is all in the title Fissure Quest instead of Star Trek. Like, what if Starfleet hadn't explored space and explored alternate dimensions instead? And that's what Lily is there to, like, trying to explain to Boimler, is, like, there is so much to learn about humanity by finding our different variations and the different versions of us and what we do differently. And she lists like the crazy things that humans have done in alternate realities. And that was such a clever way to like defend multiverse stuff a bit as well. And just like, there is so much to learn.
That it was more scientific.
If you do it properly. Yeah, exactly. Like if Star Trek did do multiverses, what would be the reason behind it? Like, what would that be about? So it's implying the core mission of Star Trek to alternate realities. And that's just like, oh, blah, 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 chef's kiss. Yes. So good. So, so good. That's like, that's fucking understanding Star Trek. Ugh.
So yeah, good. They were very, like, even their clothing looked like TOS sort of vibe. It had like kind of more puffy sort of quilted version of itself. Yeah. It looked like older sort of things. And I'm like, oh, these people are probably just, you know, like old scientists that are just doing scientist stuff. And so that was my assumption then, is that they were going to be more sciencey. I didn't say that out loud, so I can't prove that that was my thought, but it was.
No, I believe you.
And so seeing them in this gel cell for the first time was really, like, it was kind of a for me, it was a win because it wasn't a big villain. It wasn't a big bad guy. It was
way cleverer.
These people who have their own mission of exploring something. And it wasn't to go look for some crystal that's going to power a ship or something. Mm-hmm. They're just wanting to observe. I like how they also had to keep it so, so non-specific. Both Boimler and Lily say, I can't tell you who we're getting our missions from, mm-hmm. to keep it like really kind of hush.
We know it's Section 31. We it's got to be. But no, I love that. I think it's really clever that they don't realize the damage that they're doing. It's not the typical villain. Like Boimler is trying to find a villain because that's the stereotype and there isn't one. So I think it's really clever to buck that stereotype, mm-hmm. of like some random evil force is doing this and make it an accidental consequence, because the bit that broke my brain a bit was like how advanced the technology is that Lily and her crew are using compared to warp travel. This feels like it's not just, oh, we invented boats instead of cars or whatever, that's a bad example, but it's like this is like really, really crazy complicated, like way advanced stuff. So it makes sense that they fuck it up and they get it wrong, and what they're doing is actually doing a lot of damage.
But I did like the moment when they attempt to explain the science of it with their their little visual system, and it just reminds me of watching all of the things on TNG they're explaining it to you, and then you glance over it, and in very simple terms, they're just moving a little ship across that, and there's a gravity well, and it goes down, and then you're like, oh, okay.
There we go. That makes sense. I'm a visual learner. That makes complete sense.
Exactly.
I love that so much. I love Mariner's explanation. Like, none of it really makes sense, but that felt like TNG to me. That felt like, just tell me the words. That's fine. I actually really did I geeked out so much. The mini warp jump is so cool. I love that when they're like, we need to catch up to them. Well, we need to do like a micro warp jump, but we can't do that because of this reason. And they're like, increase the gravity. And then they won't matter because we weigh more and that's fine. And then she gets like squashed and pancaked. And then the graphic of the what's the name of the ship? I wrote it down. The Anaximander, which, what a fucking cool name for a ship, jumps into warp just like a little zip and then jumps out. There's like an extra thud as it jumps into warp that I was like, whoa, yeah, let's go. Give me some sound effects. Ooh, that was a thunk when you went to warp. I loved it.
Know if that was the engine thunking or
could have been me,
poor Mariner's body just crunching against the floor a little bit extra.
Turn it off. But I love that so much. So, so good. And the Anaximander is such a great name. It's a reference to, I Googled it, a Greek philosopher that predates like Socrates and one of the very, very first written people to say, hey, what if we're not the only planet? What if the sun is actually a thing out there? What if we're all floating around in this thing called space? Like, he was one of the very first people to say, hey, what if there's other worlds out there? So yeah, very, 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 very cool name. Love it. Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it.
I've never heard that name before. I think we should all be very sad that it's one of the names that hasn't really like kicked back up again. So I'm going to go ahead and guess that there are some Star Trek lovers out there that are about to have a baby. And they're like, you know what? This is it.
Anaximander. Especially when like Boimler calls it the the Manda or something. He shortens it to something like the Annex or the Manda, or like he has
it. It needs to be Nax.
Yeah, Nax. Oh, I love it.
Instead of Max, call it Nax.
We end obviously on a cliffhanger. I love Boimler's like, it was so predictable, but Boimler freaking out and screaming at the end was glorious.
Yes.
I like the, I think the handoff is really, really clever because we do get our final episode with the actual, with the crew. So how'd you feel about the cliffhanger and diving into to next week's episode?
I think this is an amazing handoff for a final episode to end the entire series, because it's not going to start the episode off that the stakes are high. And we already know that what we're watching next week is the first time that they knew it was the end. So yeah. I wonder what storytelling we're going to be seeing play out. If they're going to slow the pace a bit and make it more heartfelt, or I don't know.
It's interesting, isn't it?
I don't really know what, I don't know what to expect, but it's a really fun handoff.
Yeah.
Like, that this is like the little, you know, two-parter. So I don't think they can go wrong. Even if they decided to kill everybody, I think it would be hilarious.
Yeah, you said like before we started the show, wouldn't it be amazing if they didn't succeed? And that's the explanation
that's why the
for
show
Lower
ends.
Decks not continuing. Yeah,
yes.
They lose.
But I think that that would be a brilliant play because it, I think that they would do something like that. I think that they would have everybody like lovingly coming together at the end and being like, it's been fun. And then it blows up and it's like, thanks for the show.
Thanks for watching.
Because they just, they have that kind of air of like, yeah, who the fuck cares? Let's just fucking do it, you know?
Yeah. It would kind of tie a bow in it. You might. So there was one line that tweaked me. Harry, one of the Harrys said, wait, so there are universes with more than two dimensions, which is a, animation is, as we look at it, two dimensions. Like the way that it's drawn is two dimensional. So is he acknowledging that his universe is animated? Because then that he's acknowledging that there are dimensions where there's a third dimension, like live action. So that for me felt like if he lives in a two dimensional existence, that means he knows he's drawn pen on paper, knows, but he knows like that's what his universe is. Because the third dimension, you've got height, width, and depth. So he's missing one of those dimensions, which I believe it would be depth. So yeah, that was like interesting to me that maybe that was a subtle acknowledgement that Lower Decks is the only difference between the Lower Decks universe and the Star Trek we know is that it's two dimensions. That the only bit that undoes that for me is those old scientists where Boimler isn't like, hey, I'm three dimensional now. Like he would absolutely mention that if that was the case. But it just planted that seed that maybe Lower Decks is a different reality, and it maybe next week is the end. Maybe it does get blown up. Like, I think that's on the cards. I think that that is really, really possible.
It's wild to think that I'm most excited to find out if they're all going to die. But that is what they just handed to us.
It really
so
is.
Now it's really something to consider. And I've joked around about, I wonder if someone's going to finally die, you know, not necessarily just in this show, but in all the shows. And it's sort of a running gag in my brain, but maybe it's actually going to come to fruition. But no matter what, I think I'm excited to see where the show is going to land. I feel a sense of sadness and loss, as I talked about, you know, before we watched the episode, in a way, like when something good comes to an end and you know you're not going to be able to, like a restaurant closes because I am a Muglamite person.
You're a Cloacan.
I'm Cloacan.
Yeah.
I'm a Migley Moo. And you know you're not going to get to go back and taste that dish that you loved, but you still are glad that you had a chance to try it at all. So it's bittersweet, but I'm excited about it. I think they're probably going to end up saving the day. I think we're probably going to end up, you know, getting to see some interesting kind of like, here's what your future looks like. Maybe is it a flash forward before they die? Like they just sort of like in their last breath, they're all holding hands and then they think about like their best case scenario. And then they all go to the holodeck and they just die.
Man, thinking, if we get,
I don't know.
It would be crazy.
It's so dark.
It's so, so dark. That would be wild. I want to mention something that Link just mentioned in the chat, which would be, what if they will get blown into another universe and they all become live action? What if at the end of this episode, we have a scene with all of them live action?
For real.
That would blow, because everyone kind of looks like their characters. I don't think that's an accident. Like, I mean, there's a couple of
like
exceptions.
The cat doctor.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Migley Moo, Dr. T'Ana would be, Shaxx kind of looks like his actor.
It's,
It's possible. Yeah, I that would be, well, we talked about blowing the budget on this one. That would blow the budget, especially if we get like a live action Cerritos. There's too much. There's so much potential. I mean, yeah, I'm really excited and I think I might cry. I can see it bringing me to tears.
Every single time a season, like something comes to an end, we say it's never going to be good enough.
Yeah.
It's just we have to accept the story that they want to tell. We can always think of something that we would prefer a little bit more.
Expectations are going to be high. Yeah.
But if they go to a future where Boimler and Mariner have a baby together, I will shit my pants.
Not a chance. Not a chance. No one's even writing that fan fiction. Yeah.
Please don't do it.
They won't.
Please don't.
Not even possible.
Do it.
It's not in the cards.
I mean, it is possible. If she can have children and he can have children, it is possible.
I refuse. It is not possible.
I just hope they don't do like...
They won't.
If they're going to put a happy bow on it, fine, whatever. But please don't make it the... And they have a family and they're happy ever after.
No, it's
like,
not.
I hope
style.
It's not that.
No, it's not. The title is, we should have mentioned this earlier, but The New Next Generation. So that's
they
the title.
They do have a baby. God damn it. Oh my God. If they have a baby, Ian.
Stop it. But the New Next Generation does make me think there's going to be like a... Man, this,
a baby?
It's so loaded. Like, because you're talking about Star Trek The Next Generation, The New Next Generation is so loaded with, like, expectation. Like, how is it going to tie into the old shows?
Like, what if the new Next Generation is that they launch a new show at the end that they've completely kept secret?
It would be, I would love that.
I would cry.
If this, like, transitions
I'd
into
be
a
so
light.
Happy.
If the reason Lower Deck Season 5 is ending is because we're going to have a live action show of these guys on a new ship. We have to stop. It's enough.
We have to stop because there's nothing better than what we're going to make. We're going to make it worse.
Wait, if they kept this under the radar,
we got to go to the Sims. Let's go to the Sims.
We've done the predictions completely out of order.
Shut this shit down.
I didn't even mean for this to be predictions, but there we go. There's our prediction section. Pips, before we go into Sims. Pips, how many pips? It's four,
seven
of
pips.
Course. It's four.
How many? Four pips. Okay, yeah, it's a four pipper. This is an awesome episode.
It's eight pips. It's an admiral. All of them. Love it. Four pips, everyone. Four pips. It will take me maybe 2 seconds to do this. Let's quickly head over to engineering for some Sims. Battle Stations Red Alert.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs. Plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
Red alarm. Red alarm.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sim brains, remind ourselves that no TV shows without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Ambassador, do you have anything?
It was when Mariner popped up on screen. It really pissed me off. And I'm like, does this happen? Am I missing? Am I misremembering?
Oh, right. Sorry. No. It happens in Voyager, but there's a functional reason for it because this is at a point where the Doctor can't move around the ship. So if he wants to be involved in briefings, like, he's a bit shady to begin with because he would pop up on a screen in their observation lounge and saying, since I wasn't invited, I decided to listen myself and pop in. And this is at a point where they're just like, he's just a hologram. It doesn't matter. They don't really respect him because he wasn't intended to be the chief medical officer. He's only there because their doctor dies in episode one. So he will pop up on screen and then they deliberately invite him and then he'll pop up on the bridge as well and just like, I'm here, I have an answer. So that's the only reference that I have for it. Usually we're used to it in TNG or like in the original series where Scotty or Geordi will pop up and be like, Captain, we can't take any more or the engine's going to blow because that's cheaper than filming something that you then have to put on screen is my answer to that. I will get shot for this metaphorically, but there was a little bit of relationship drama skip between Garak and Bashir.
Right.
I know we're exampling that relationship continues. They argue, but it was a bit too much. And the thing that they argued about was a little bit inconsequential. They would have like really deep philosophical arguments on Deep Space Nine, and you love to see it, love it. And I know this is deliberate. Like, this is showing, well, this is how they would argue about the mundane things in life and living together, and this is how they would exist. There was just a fraction too much for me, just a little bit skippable. I was like, this isn't adding much to the story. Cut, trim.
Here's a scene from Sci-Fi Brony. A holographic hypo spray works. And there is some discussion about this apparently on our Discord.
Wait, why was the hypo spray holographic?
Hypo spray. I don't know.
I don't think it was holographic.
Well, this is the conversation happening. I'm just going to mention it. Here's another one from David who says, when Curzon died, we did not find out that there was a multiverse Jadzia on board so we could have a Terry Farrell cameo.
That would have been great, having Jadzia, right. Terry Farrell come back. But again, similar to Jolene Blalock, didn't leave on the best of terms.
I thought this one in the moment too, wondering why can Rutherford's implant make a huge beam of plasma? How and what? How?
Why? So dangerous. Mm-hmm. And why isn't everyone ducking immediately in case it goes off again?
Crazy.
Like, he needs to
rip it off.
Like Skywards, or like cover it up or
remove it.
Yeah. Stop it.
Take it off. Yeah.
What else did I have? This was a fun one. We've got an emergency holographic doctor. Why isn't there an emergency holographic engineer for this dangerous situation? Like, nobody should have to stay behind in engineering to do the thing when you can have an emergency hologram do it, which is what happens because holographic Bashir turns up and says, I can do it, which just makes me ask the question, why don't you already have one of those for engineering?
Let's see. I'll pick up another one from, do you have any more? How many more do you have?
I got a couple more.
Here's a sin removal from Flyboy earlier. I'm going to remove 5 sins for the guest cast.
Yes.
Garrett Wang, Andrew Robinson, Alexander Siddig, Alfrey?
Yep.
Woodard and Jolene, who dropped her name for the sake of privacy, all reprising their roles, not 5, but 6 sin removals.
Love it. It was incredible. Like, to orchestrate all of those people coming back together. And I'm always curious, like, did they have lots of different permutations and these were the people they could agree to come back? Did some people say no? Were some people too expensive? Like, you've got to write this story and then potentially be ready to insert different characters in there. And I think you can do that with most of this. Like, I can imagine T'Pol being someone else in that role. Really cool. Getting Lily back is the big one. Like, that's so, so cool. I've got, just in general, that Lieutenant Kim's logic and plan is bonkers crazy. Like, his logic is that he can take all of these Kims back to his universe where they'll automatically get promoted. That's dumb. That's insane. And he's betting his life on it. He's like, it's a huge risk. Like, he's going to be a criminal on the run now. Like, I don't know why he thinks this plan is a good plan or has a hope of working. Like, what if his Kims are all not promoted for a reason? What if it wasn't the universe's fault? What if it's the Kims' fault? So, yeah, I didn't like his villain plan. I'm glad we didn't spend too much time on it. And I'm glad it was kind of like a product of circumstance rather than a premeditated, it was Kim all along kind of thing. Yeah.
Another sin removal from Flyboy. The quote being, I'm a surgeon, but not just. And then the sin removal is such a Deep Space Nine Garrick line from the LD writers, and it was delivered to perfection.
Also, the live chat, you are misunderstanding the sin section. This is sins. This isn't sin removals.
Hey, we do sin offs.
This isn't the stuff we like.
We do sin offs around here.
We've had the good stuff.
Okay, fine. Here's another one. Sin removal. The throwaway Tuvix reference. Sin. The Tuvix debate. Okay.
The Tuvix debate continues. I've only got, I mean, there's, of course, lots of silly ones that I'm sure are in there if I watched it again, but I had such a good time. It really was hard to find the nitpicky stuff. It was a little bit jarring that Curzon, so blatantly bad at his job, like, insubordinate, firing, like, you could argue with your captain, firing fucking weapons in the middle of a void and disabling the ship, way out of line. Like, way, way, way out of line. That's a terrible helmsman, security officer, tactical officer. So bad, so naughty.
So bad, Curzon. So
I think that brings us to the end of that. Everyone, please send us some mail, send us some messages, send us something too. CaptainsPod@cinemasins.com. We have made the shift over to Blue Sky, so you can find us CaptainsPod@bluesky.social, I believe it is. But if you search for CaptainsPod, we'll be in there. And join our lovely CinemaSins Discord to join all of the lovely Trek fans. It's discord.gg/cinemasins. We'll be back at the same time in your podcast feed next Wednesday for the Lower Decks finale. And next week we will explain kind of like what the Christmas the holiday period is going to look like for the Captain's Pod podcast feed, and what the next kind of few episodes after Lower Decks are going to be all about as well. Anything else to plug, Ambassador?
I would plug that we're going to have our live show for the finale on Saturday the 21st at 11 Central, and you can watch live from the CinemaSins podcast network on YouTube, or you can watch us on Twitch, which is twitch.tv/twitch.com.
No, it's .tv.
Yeah. twitch.tv/cinemasinslive if you want to join us for the live show on Saturday.
And you get to see stuff like that. Check out the live recording of this on YouTube to find out what that was.
The panels of my starship keep falling.
Just everything falling down. It was amazing. It was perfect timing. 11 a.m. just in case anyone thought we were going to do this at 11 p.m. for whatever reason.
11 a.m. Central, Saturday the 21st. Yeah. We will be talking about the final episode of Lower Decks if you are able to join us.
That would be amazing. We'd love to see it. Okay. That's it. Until next week, I'm Captain Ian, and damn you too, Pip Kim.
Was it fucking Kim? Is that what it says?
Fucking Kims.
And it's thanks to insubordination, we have landed.
Amazing. Live long and prosper, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through CaptainsPod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Do you think anybody's going to notice that I'm essentially wearing a heat cape today? Look at these shoulders.
I know. You have the square shoulders of a Romulan right now. Because they're like, they have a very rectangular profile.
Yeah, I can see that.
Actually, they may be more Vulcan.
Can we just say that they're Vulcan?
Yeah, we'll say they're Vulcan instead of Romulan.
Vulcan, Romulan, what's the difference?
Yeah. Wait, what? What did you just say?
I was so surprised that you didn't react to that. Like, I did it just for the reaction. And you're like, yep, wait.
It's one of those things, somebody says something so outrageous, you just agree with it. And then you're like, wait, no,
I can't agree to that.
They do have a common ancestor. Did you know that they're the same species, but then they split.
With, like, how does one split from their species? I'm asking for a friend.
It's asking for a friend. Their friend is me. I am human. They don't really spell it out, but the Romulans kind of...
Oh my God, what if that's going to be answered in today's episode?
That would be incredibly unlikely, and I would be very scared, because that means some psychic shit is happening. Because there's no reason for them to answer that in this episode.
Would you want them to answer something so huge in Lower Decks, or should it be like in a movie?
No, I love the swing of doing it in Lower Decks. Like, just, or it's just like a Twitter update. It's like, FYI, this is how it happened.
I decided not to brush my hair, so people might notice my Romulan shoulders and, what creature has, like, essentially
really
just...
matted hair?
Yeah, just dready looking hair.
There is a species. Don't say anything. It's got to come to me. Nausicaan. The Nausicaans have very matty, dready hair like that.
Okay, I'm a Nausicaan.
Romulan? Yeah, they wouldn't get on.
I'm a ramekin.
Oh.
Which is, do you know what a ramekin is?
Yeah, it's a little, I know what a ramekin is. It's a little dish. It's a tiny little dish that you think you're going to use for something, but never do.
You never do.
They just sit in the cupboard. I do want to get back to the Romulan Vulcan thing, though.
Oh, okay.
Because that does confuse me. Because Spock's big mission is to reunify them. But there are two different planets. There's Vulcan and Romulus.
Is this like when divorced children try to get their parents back together?
Yeah, he's trying to parent trap two species. Yeah.
That's a really big mission.
Yeah, huge mission. It's one of the big reasons he and his dad fell out, because his dad was just like, this is pointless. And Spock's like,
And that maybe that's why Spock takes the mission on, because like, hey, I wasn't that interested, but now that my dad doesn't want me to do it, I'm going to definitely try to do it.
It's the human in him that's just rebelling against reason.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't understand exactly how they split, because that would suggest that they needed space travel in order to split onto different planets.
So is the idea that they're pure Vulcan, but like part of the colony leaves for a different planet and then intermingles with another species?
I don't think so, but it isn't. It could be. It's not specified. It said they have a common ancestor. They used to be one.
They could genetically be the same.
Yeah. But I gotta go look at
what a Romulan looks like.
It's so long ago that their genetics have evolved differently. So we must be talking about millions of years. So how long have they had space travel?
So Romulans have the protrusion on their forehead in that V shape.
Only the northern Romulans.
Picard, oh my God.
Yeah, this is weird. Picard established this because they started the J.J. Abrams films and Picard were like showing were showing Romulans that didn't have the V. And we were like, what's going on? And then Picard's kind of girlfriend, I can't remember her name, that Romulan.
Yeah.
Her kind of partner had the V. And she was like, it's just because you're a northerner. So apparently northern Romulans, and they're the ones that tend to go into the military more, which is Star Trek's explanation for why the only ones we've seen are the ones with the V.
Because they're the bad guys or whatever.
Because they're the bad guys. The military Romulans are the only ones we've seen.
Oh, I just saw this picture when looking for Romulan from Picard, and it showed the kid, and I just remember that he existed. What was his name? Like Enzo or something?
Choose to Live.
Arlong?
It says so much that I've forgotten his name, because they deleted him from like season 2 and 3.
Yeah, he's just presumed dead, I guess.
In season 3 he is. No, they mention where he went. He went somewhere. Because in season 2 he joined Starfleet and he's on a ship. I think he's on the Excelsior or something.
Yeah, but that's just, it's the equivalent of saying like your dog went to go live on the farm. He's dead.
Yeah, he died. Oh, dang it. What is his name? That's
Enzo.
Rough. It's not Enzo. It's just because you watch Stranger Things. It's not Enzo. I feel like it is an E word. I want to get there.
It's Ian.
Yeah, it's Ian. Please, Choose to Live.
Oh, I did have this random thought. When the episode opens up and our beloved crew are like in 10 forward all chatting and Rutherford is messing with his eyepiece and then they're like, we've all died. Like, look over at Shax, for example. And then we glance over at him and he's making these noises and stabbing at his plate or whatever. I recently started playing Plants vs. Zombies again.
Oh, I love that game so much.
How long has it been since you've played it?
Like 10 years. I didn't play the second one. I know there's a second one, a sequel that came out.
I got the OG one out and I, side note, riddled with ads. Super disappointed.
That's annoying.
There is the guy who runs the shop and he kind of goes, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, hillbilly kind of guy.
Yes, exactly like Shax.
Yes.
And because I just played it, I was like, all of a sudden in my head, I started hearing dun, 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 dun,
yes.
dun, dun,
dun, dun. Oh, I love that music. It's so good.
Anyway.
Oh my God, that game is so good. So good.
So when I heard Shax make his whatever noise he made, that did not leave my brain for quite some time.
That's amazing. Do you think Q works with the Multiverse Ambassador?
Works with?
Yeah, or are they limited?
Q works with anything. It's I think Q...
Yeah. But do you think they just ignore the fact that there's a multiverse, or do you think that they're messing with the multiverse as well?
So like Q's exist outside of multiverse space and time and can manipulate them?
Or are they just in their own universe and can't travel between them?
Well, I think anything can travel between if there's rifts that are created. So True. It's possible to travel between.
But without the rifts.
Oh, I see.
Just as the Q.
Like, are they interdimensional?
Yeah.
Do they have interdimensional capabilities? Do they have their powers in every single one of these multiverses?
This is a good way to put it. Is it the same Q across all realities, or is there a parallel Q for each reality?
Mm-hmm. I think it would break their canon if it was one Q for all. I think that's too much of a godlike character.
I agree.
So I think that would be Qs for each. Mm. Otherwise, I think the question is like, well, then what makes this particular, like, such a superior version?
Yeah.
Which brings in the religion kind of aspect, I think, a little too much.
Link, did the Qs evolve, or are they always a godlike being? According to the Q that we've talked to, they did used to be corporeal beings that ascended to become the Q that we know.
Perhaps we should check the Q FAQ.
Q fact. Way. Nice.
What would your transporter clones name themselves? I think mine would probably try to go for something as epic as that pre-Socrates sort of Socrates.
Anaximander.
What's Socrates? Who called him Socrates? Was that on Bill and Ted?
Bill and Ted. Socrates. Yeah. Socrates is anus.
Yeah, I'd want to do something like that.
Yeah.
I've always liked the really long names. Always.
One of my favorite names is Ethan, and it's so similar to Ian that I think my transporter clone would just be Ethan. Like, oh yeah, that's similar. Yeah.
So you would just go with your own Ethan. Name, but a
yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Very.
Same amount of syllables as well.
I take the name and make middle. It something like really like intricate. And
no, I'm just adding TH to the middle of mine, Ethan.
Like, I just don't want to think about that. I'll be right back. I gotta go take the dogs. I'll be right back.
You gotta go take the dogs? Where is she taking them? I think she's gonna take them. She's talking to me even though she's backstage. I wonder if she can still hear me. Is she gonna rejoin? We still can't hear you.
Hi.
You back? I just see you wittering away in the background. But no up. One can hear you.
Shut up. I'm taking my dogs out to go to the bathroom. Leave me.
Oh, to the butt, right, not literally taking them out. I'm like, sorry,
you
Lassie.
You wanna kill my dogs?
Well, you said take them out.
What the fuck is wrong with you, man?
Elnor.
Elnor. Well done.
No, I googled it. I didn't remember that.
Enzo. I was Enzo. Close.
You were close.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.